This is Jay Sekulow. Two major wins at the Supreme Court of the United States, both unanimous.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
When Congress refuses to act, and as a result, hurts our economy and puts our people at risk, then I have an obligation as president to do what I can without them.
One decision is already in, and Shannon Bream has been going through it. It has to do with whether or not the president can make recess appointments.
The president does have power to make recess appointments, but in this particular case, this is a unanimous opinion, they said the three-day window that the Senate was operating on with a gavel in, gavel out was too short. So while recognizing a lot of constitutional power for the president to make recess appointments, they said in this case, not so. It says under the standard set forth here, the Senate was in session during these pro forma sessions at issue. It said it was in session, and Senate rules make clear that the Senate retained the power to conduct business. What happened here, because the Senate was in session during its pro forma sessions, the president made the recess appointments at issue during a three-day recess. 3 days is too short a time to bring a recess within the scope of the clause, that appointments clause, so the president lacked the authority to make those appointments. So while recognizing a broad power for the president to make recess appointments in this case, it's not going to work. It's a unanimous opinion. 3 days was too short, so these appointments to the National Labor Relations Board were no good.
The Supreme Court struck down a Massachusetts law that had a 35-foot fixed no-protest zone around the entrances to abortion clinics in the state. The Supreme Court struck that down and said that it's just too blunt an instrument, that a public sidewalk is a public forum, and that to simply paint a line on the sidewalk is easy to enforce, the court said, but it's not the kind of narrow tailoring that the law requires when you're limiting public speech.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We've got two major decisions coming out of the Supreme Court of the United States. One, a huge victory for the House of Representatives and a gigantic defeat for the President of the United States. Remember those controversial recess appointments to the National Labor Relations Board? Very controversial because the Senate was not actually in recess. Yet the president put these three members on the NLRB, which, by the way, issued about 1,000 decisions that came out during that period. Well, the Supreme Court unanimously, in a decision written by Justice Breyer, held that, in fact, the Senate was not in recess, which was the position we advocated. We actually represented the Speaker of the House in that case. And, David, it's very fair to say that this was a huge victory for the House of Representatives, too.
Oh, absolutely. A victory for the House of Representatives, which has a dispositive say in the calendaring and whether or not the Senate is in session. And it was a big victory for common sense. I mean, Justice Breyer said it very clearly. Look, there's no recess when the Senate is in session, and it's in session when it says it is.
Yeah. So, Jordan, this is a big rebuff to the President of the United States as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea here, the Obama administration trying to fight this all the way through the Supreme Court, these NLRB appointments, and the fact that the Supreme Court unanimously said, and then, you know, the rare, obviously a little bit of a surprise in this case, it was unanimous, that the Supreme Court would say, no, when you want a recess, and you can have recesses intercession or intra-session, so during, but you've got to get agreement from the House of Representatives. We represent Speaker Boehner. So the fact that the Supreme Court empowered the House of Representatives, it can't get much better than that when it comes to this case and this rebuke of presidential overreach.
Yep. So, Than, what's the reaction from the Speaker? Because it has to be pretty significant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they all get frustrated when there's abuse of power. And let me tell you this. What I'm hearing from the Speaker is that this is how you fight back. You make a convincing constitutional argument, and you beat them 9-0 at the Supreme Court.
Then, on top of that, pro-life case, 9-0 against Massachusetts, allowing free speech in front of abortion clinics. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. 18-0. Got 18 justices to agree with in both cases. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. We'll have an update on Miriam Ibrahim. By the way, we are still taking the petition is growing quickly for Miriam Ibrahim. Still in jail in Sudan. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org. We're not going to be spending a lot of time on her case and discussions today because of all this other breaking news. But don't forget, stand with her in this fight to get her out of Sudan. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. If you want to talk to us on air, 800-684-3110.
What appeared to be a tremendous victory for religious freedom has taken an unexpected turn for the worse. Miriam Ibrahim, imprisoned with her two young children because of her Christian faith, had been released by the Sudanese government, spared torture and the death penalty. But one day later, while she and her family were at the airport, her attorney says she was rearrested and her family taken into custody by Sudanese officials. Miriam and her family's fate are now unclear. At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States. Time is of the essence. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online, aclj.org.
This is Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top two in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law.
All
right, welcome back. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. What's your reaction to President Obama being told, you know those recess appointments you made? Not so quick, because Congress was not in recess. And the president was doing that on his own initiative, and the Supreme Court unanimously, by Justice Breyer, said, you can't do that, Mr. President. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. At the same time, a major pro-life win on a series of cases we've argued at the Supreme Court involving speech around abortion clinics. The court, again, ready, folks? Unanimous, 9-0, saying a 35-foot buffer zone around the abortion clinic, unconstitutional restriction on free speech, citing our case involving the Schenck brothers. In Schenck versus Pro-Choice Action Network, a case I argued almost 20 years ago at the Supreme Court of the United States, and they held this buffer zone unconstitutional. So let me tell you, two big wins. I mean, to say that's a significant win. And David, you were saying that the Obama administration hasn't had a real good run at the Supreme Court this term.
No, the Obama administration has lost. This was the 12th and 13th unanimous defeats for the Obama administration at the Supreme Court during his time in office. Normally, the Justice Department wins about 70%
right.
of its cases.
Right.
And
of course, they won the Obamacare one, and that was their big one. But look, we're waiting for that one. By the way, Hobby Lobby did not come out. We expect that Hobby Lobby. Jordan, the sense is Monday's it, right?
That's it. Yeah, Monday, Hobby Lobby in a case involving public sector unions. So Hobby Lobby will be the big one.
And I don't think it's – I'm optimistic but cautiously so. I think it's going to be a very close case. We'll keep everybody posted. We are taking your phone calls. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court telling the president, no, you don't get to make recess appointment when Congress is not in recess? 1-800-684-3110 is the number. That's 800-684-3110. Zero. So we'll take your calls on that. We'll also take your calls on Miriam Ibrahim's tragic situation. Jordan, a lot of conflicting reports coming out of Sudan today. We're talking about a lot of different topics, folks, because there's a lot breaking right now. What's the latest in this very, very difficult situation?
You know, yesterday the State Department reaffirming that she was, in fact, arrested, that she was detained at a police station. There are some news today, some reports that she's been allowed to leave that police station, but not allowed to leave the country. So this idea that she's freed, I think, is incorrect. At a minimum, she may be under some kind of safe house or house arrest situation, not by the United States, by the Sudanese. So, you know, I think it's still being held against her will in what all reports are saying, and she's not allowed to leave the country. We're getting closer, as we said. Once tomorrow comes, this Islamic country, things shut down. The government services shut down till Sunday, which means this saga continues about whether or not she'll be able to leave and if she'll remain safe while there.
Well, which raises the next question, and I think this is one that is significant, and that is the misinformation coming out of the State Department, David, here has been unbelievable. I mean, really unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't decide whether they're just spinning their own failure or they legitimately don't really have any idea what's going on and are trying to pretend that they have some grasp on the situation.
Yeah. Than, what do you hear? I know there's been a lot of you were on the phone with members of the Senate yesterday. What's your sense?
It's both of what David just said. They have no idea what's going on, and they are embarrassed that they had her in her custody and they let her slip away. That is inexcusable.
Unreal.
And the fact that
Unreal.
We aren't getting more information out is they don't want people to understand just how bad it was.
All right, folks, we want to stand, as we're talking about these Supreme Court decisions, we're not forgetting Miriam Ebrahim or Saeed Abedini. On Miriam's case, we've got a petition that is up right now. I want to encourage you, everybody that's listening, I mean, by the way, the response has been really fantastic. We've had, as of this morning, 138,436 of you sign online. We said I'd like to have 150,000 by Monday if she's still incarcerated. All right, we're going to get there with your help, but here's what I need everybody to do. While we're talking about two big Supreme Court wins, help Miriam Ebrahim, her two American children and her American father, the husband of her children. Her husband is an American. The kids are Americans, and they are in custody. We had them. U.S. personnel were right there with them. And that's what happens. So here's what I'd like to see you do, folks. Stand with us and stand with Miriam Ebrahim, ACLJ.org, or 1-877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org. Now, back to the Supreme Court decision. This is a huge win for the Speaker of the House, Than and Jordan.
Yeah, and you know, I know, Jay, that people have had disagreements with the Speaker of the House, but I want people to be very paying close attention to this one. They need to recognize what he did here. He took a very principled stand with us in defense of his Article I power. He fought the long, patient legal fight with us. And, Jay, he achieved with us the most significant restraint on President Obama's powers to date. It's worthy of very high praise. People need to understand this is something he did behind the scenes with us, with our counsel, and this is a major victory for the House, and the person that led the charge was the Speaker of the House. So people that criticize him need to also recognize just what a major accomplishment this is for him.
Well, I'll tell you something else. I want to get Jordan's comment on this. We represented the Speaker in this, and it's very clear that the recess appointment clause cannot just be run over by the President of the United States. He has entitled to recess appointments, but there has to actually be a recess, and the Constitution gives the Senate wide latitude to determine whether they're in session, as does the House control of the calendar. So, yeah, go ahead, Jordan.
Well, this is a situation where you can't have someone from the president's party as majority leader, so that because they make up the majority in the Senate, just run amok over the Constitution when they decide to ignore, especially in a situation where you've got a divided Congress. You've got a House that's a Republican in this case, a Senate that's Democrat, a president that's a Democrat, that they still have to follow the rules. If they want to have a recess, go through the process, is all the Supreme Court's saying. Not that the president doesn't have the power to do so. This doesn't change power for future presidents, but what it says is if there's a Republican president, a Republican Senate, but a Democrat House, that those two can't just do what they want without getting the House to agree to a recess, which has been the normal operating procedure. It doesn't mean that recess appointments are wrong or unconstitutional. That's clear in the Constitution. It's that you can't just do this with one branch of the of Congress and the executive branch.
And I think, David, when you look at the situation here, The what happens and what's at play becomes very significant for not only and the Speaker did take a bold stand here, which we really appreciate, but constitutionally, this is a very significant opinion, folks.
Oh, absolutely. It preserves the separation of powers, pure and simple. I mean, it does that. And then the other thing it does...
Well, let's explain the separation of powers to people. What we're talking about here is how our government actually operates.
Right. I mean, on a political appointee by the president, the Senate has an advise and consent function. In other words, the president isn't going to get appointees through just by fiat. He has to have the Senate approval for these appointments. What the president was trying to do was get around that by using this recess appointment power when the Senate wasn't actually in recess. So this preserves the Senate's voice, a Democratic voice, in the presidential appointment process, which is really important and particularly important for the NLRB, which is partisan and out of control.
And really damaging for business. I mean, it's been, really damaging for business. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Jordan, let's take a call here.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to David in California, line one. David, welcome to JSEC Live.
With the board decision, to what extent have the decisions that were made since those appointments now become invalidated?
They are all the ones where the three recess appointees were on the panel, were on the NLRB, those are gone. And our initial indication looks like they issued upwards of 1,000 opinions during that time frame. So those, David, would be null and void.
You know, that's exactly right. And what's particularly reckless here is even after the D.C. Circuit issued its opinion saying that these recess appointments were invalid, the NLRB, which is highly partisan, vowed to continue business as usual. In other words, it vowed to press ahead with its extreme left-wing decision-making until the Supreme Court stepped in. And now that's going to mean there's going to be a lot of chaos that's going to reign because they were so reckless and lawless. But this shouldn't surprise anyone with this administration.
Well, I think, Jordan, also this is a big statement against the president's overreach. It's not that they don't have authority to do to make recess appointments. I want to be clear there. The Constitution allows that. But there has to actually be a recess. And the most important takeaway here is the president doesn't get to make the rule up on when they're in recess.
Yeah, he doesn't get to say, well, it seems like a recess, or because Harry Reid has declared these kind of pro forma recess that we saw, which were, again, they were still doing Senate business. They were just declaring that they weren't on the floor, things like that, that the president can't just step in and say, okay, this is a recess for constitutional purposes. I can make recess appointments. And so that's what the Supreme Court, this was a rebuke today of an overreach in presidential power by the Obama administration, who kept fighting this all the way to the Supreme Court, and ultimately here were dealt another blow.
All right, so a 9-0 decision on the presidential powers of appointment, that's big. A 9-0 decision for pro-life protests, a big win there as well. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. I tell you, a big day at the Supreme Court. The decision in Hobby Lobby will be out Monday, so we'll have analysis of that, of course, as soon as that breaks. We've got information posted online on these decisions, by the way, at ACLJ.org. But if you want to talk to us on air about these cases or Miriam Ibrahim's, 1-800-684-3110. By the way, we're going to continue the fight for her release. As Jordan said, the reports have not been true. She's not freed. She can't leave the country. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. To sign on, that's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to work for Miriam Ibrahim's release, getting the president and the Speaker of the House, the president and the Secretary of State to speak out on this. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. And if you want to talk to us on air, it's 800-684-3110. Let me also say, continue to pray for Miriam Ibrahim, her family, and for Saeed Abedini. Back with more in a moment.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. What appeared to be a tremendous victory for religious freedom has taken an unexpected turn for the worse. Miriam Ibrahim, imprisoned with her two young children because of her Christian faith, had been released by the Sudanese government, spared torture and the death penalty. But one day later, while she and her family were at the airport, her attorney says she was rearrested and her family taken into custody by Sudanese officials. Miriam and her family's fate are now unclear. At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States. Time is of the essence. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online, ACLJ.org.
just joining us, we're, of course, talking about Miriam's case as well. Again, you know, folks, look, we've got the American people, us. We have two American kids basically in custody in Sudan, an American father and husband in custody in Sudan. We had them released. The State Department personnel were with them, and they let them go back to the Sudanese. And right now the White House is not saying much, and nor is the Secretary of State, and giving very conflicting information. They said they got it wrong the other day. They apologized. You know, enough with the apologies. We need to get this woman out of Sudan. So, again, if you haven't signed that petition, now let me encourage you to do it at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to sign the petition urging for her release. I encourage you to do that. Jordan, let's take Oren's call out of Texas.
Oren, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Oren.
Hey, thank you, Jay, and thank you for all you do. God bless you for all your work.
Yep.
I'm happy to hear these two Supreme Court decisions, and I know you've talked a little bit about it, but I know you're not one to toot your own horn. But would you expound a little bit on yours and the ACLJ's involvement at the Supreme Court in these two cases?
Sure. Well, in the first one, the recess appointment case, we actually, very historic for us, we represented the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, because the issue was, is there a recess or not? And as the Constitution requires, the House and the Senate determine that, not the President of the United States. So this was a real check on constitutional power, and we actually represented in what's called a friend of the court brief, the Speaker of the House. So it was a historic move for us to represent the Speaker, and we were very honored that he allowed us to do that on his behalf. And it was just for him. No other members assigned. It was just the Speaker filing the brief. So we wrote the brief and were counsel of record for him in that case. On the pro-life case, we filed a friend of the court brief, but I argued the predecessor cases. The two U.S. predecessor cases involving that particular cases. One of them was the case involving Hill versus Colorado, which was decided incorrectly against our interests, actually, almost 10 years ago. But what's interesting, three justices of the court wanted to overrule Hill versus Colorado, and this court distinguished it, but instead said that the buffer zone around the abortion clinics violated free speech because of another case of ours that I argued in the Supreme Court in 1992 representing Paul and Rob Schenck. They do great work in Washington, D.C. with Faith in Action, but the Schenck brothers were involved in pro-life activism. It was a lawsuit involving them against the Pro-Choice Action Network, and we won that case at the Supreme Court 8-1 back in 1992, and this was kind of a follow-up cases from there, so it was a great win. Oren, thanks for asking. We don't toot our own horn. We're on to the next case. I mean, that's kind of how you have to deal with it here. We're taking calls, 800-684-3110.
Yep, Darren in California, on line one. Darren, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Darren.
Oh, hey, Jay. Jordan, I appreciate the show and everything you do.
Thanks.
Just a quick comment. I was happy, proud to hear Congress actually holding the president accountable for, you know, some of the things that he's been doing, and I think this is a good victory. Do you think, in light of this victory, that the next lawsuit that Speaker Boehner has filed on, you know, the executive orders will gain momentum and we'll have a good chance there as well?
I want to get Jordan and David and Than's comments. Let me go to Jordan first. What's your sense of the Speaker's got this new proposal of a potential lawsuit?
I think it all comes down to the focus. So we know about the broader statement here about the challenges to executive authority. And then, as of right now, there's not been specifics released about what executive authority. That's the next statement that we would say would be coming.
He's given broad guidelines to his conference, but I think this is the key, Jordan. This is what it signals. The Speaker of the House is taking this executive overreach very, very seriously. I mean, you talk about the recess nominations case. This is very significant because people only think about the Senate when it comes to confirming nominees, but the House can keep the Senate from going into recess. The Speaker recognized that. He engaged with us on the executive orders issue. He is now talking to his conference about suing the President of the United States. So I think it just signals that it's front and center on his agenda, and we'll see where it goes from there.
I'll tell you one thing. Regardless of whether the suit carries the day or not, there's no doubt, David, that there is a high level of concern by the legislative branch of what the executive
is
doing.
I mean, there's gathering opposition here to the Obama administration's abuse of executive authority. I mean, you get down to 13 unanimous decisions against you in the Supreme Court, you're beginning to lose your credibility in your the case you're taking to the public. The Obama administration has stretched executive authority past the breaking point. to implement really a radical agenda. And you see that with the NLRB. Remember, they tried to block Boeing building a plant
right
in South Carolina. That's thousands upon thousands of jobs. They tried to block that because they didn't like Boeing's presumed ideology about union membership. So that's how out of control they are.
I've got a personal favor to ask. We are just looked on Facebook. I'm at 997,000. 997,000 signatures or likes, I guess, on Facebook. So 997. We want to get to 1 million. Now, there's a sense in the office here, our media center, that will we get there today or will we get there tomorrow? Now, it really doesn't make any difference. No. But you know what? It does make a difference when you get to 1 million. We're able to talk to you instantaneously. So here's what I'd like you to do right now. I'd like to be able to say by, you know, certainly we come on air tomorrow that we're at 1 million likes on Facebook. We're 2,546 away. For those of you that are on Facebook or have access to Facebook, go to Facebook and like my page. It's Jay Sekulow, J-A-Y-S-E-K-U-L-O-W. Do that, and let's see if we can get up to, in the next 20 hours, up to 1 million signatures. That would be, or likes, that would be great. And just do that at facebook.com/Jay Sekulow. All right, let's take these other calls in rapid succession here, Jordan.
Yeah, let's go first to Edward in New York, line 5. Edward, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Edward.
Hi, Jay. Listen, I was on the radio a couple of days ago,
yep,
and I heard about the Miriam.
Yes. Ibrahim. Yep.
Ibrahim's case. Yep. All right, and there was a woman that was praying afterwards, and I agreed with those prayers. Now, can you tell me what the status is of this case?
I will let Jordan do this. I will tell you, we're going to give you the best information we have.
She's still in Sudan, still in some kind of detention, may not be in the prison anymore, though I think a lot of these reports are conflicting. I always assume the worst in this situation because it keeps getting to be, you know, I don't want to build hopes up. So she's, in my mind, she's still under some kind of detention, facing potential criminal charges that carry up to 7 years in jail because of wrong paperwork. And this could be the fault of the United States government. Because the U.S. Yep. government coordinated this paperwork. So this is far from over, Edward, unfortunately. Listen, can we wake up tomorrow and find out she got out of the country? Absolutely. That's what we hope for. That's what we pray for. But this is not done.
So this is what it means, folks. We're closing this segment of the broadcast out. By the way, we're here for another 30 minutes. SiriusXM, you get the full hour, or ACLJ.org. You can listen. Let me tell you what we need to do. We need to be praying for Miriam Ibrahim. We need to be doing that now. We need to be taking action. We got to get the president and the secretary of state to do the direct ask and not hold anything back here. So if you haven't signed on, remember, I want you to be thinking about those two kids, little kids, Americans, her husband, an American. They were in custody of American embassy personnel, and we'd let them go back to Sudan, to the Sudanese. I mean, when I say that, I can't even believe it. So with all euphoria over the victory at the Supreme Court of the United States, and we're really thrilled about those, and thank God for those victories, let's not forget about the Saeed Abedinis of the world, the Miriam Ibrahims. You go right now, everybody that's listening to me, to ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255 and sign that petition now for her release. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. We've got a lot to be grateful for with these two victories at the Supreme Court, but we have to be prepared for the continued fight for the persecuted church. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. And folks, go ahead and like my page on Facebook. Help us get to 1 million likes. That's a goal for us. ACLJ.org or just Jay Sekulow on Facebook. Just Facebook.com/Jay Sekulow.
At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online, ACLJ.org.
everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Listen, folks, in just a moment, I'm going to play for you an interview that Jay did with Bill Hemmer on Fox News right after this ruling from the Supreme Court in the Canning case, dealing with these recess nominations from the president. Right after it came down, he was on with Bill Hemmer explaining the ramifications of this. And let me just set the stage for you for just a moment. At question in this case was whether or not the nominations made by the president when the Senate and the House were in session were valid. And here is the key phrase from the United States Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 5. Neither House during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days. So, folks, in plain English, what that says is both of the House and the Senate have to agree if they are going to leave for more than three days. That did not happen in this case, and yet the President of the United States made his nominations. That is why we went to the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, and said, listen, the prerogatives of the House are at stake here. You did not agree for the Senate to leave for more than 3 days. Therefore, this is your constitutional grounds. He certainly agreed. He's been a leader on this issue. He was eager to move forward with his argument. We did it on his behalf at the circuit level and at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court today affirmed that position. The House of Representatives has a right to keep the Senate in session and therefore block the president from making recess nominations. This is a big victory for the legislative branch, and it is a big victory for the House of Representatives. It's a big victory all around. Let's go ahead and listen to this interview. Jay explaining these details as they break with Bill Hemmer on Fox News.
Now, the Supreme Court ruling moments ago, the recess appointments made by President Obama to the National Labor Relations Board without Senate confirmation were illegal. Here now with more, Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. And fortuitous to have you here because you are a part of this now. What does the ruling mean, Jay?
Well, what it says is that in this particular case, the appointments by the president, the so-called recess appointments to the National Labor Relations Board, were not valid because the House and Senate, they were in recess, and therefore the Senate was in recess, and that the House basically has the calendar control. And that was a key thing that we argued, by the way, representing the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, in the case. So we represented the Speaker. So the appointments bill that were made during this period by those three NLRB so-called recess appointments, the decisions made by the National Labor Relations Board during that time frame were not valid.
So
they're of no effect,
this is
at least during that particular time.
This is a slap down about executive power, then.
It's a significant victory for what's called the separation of powers. And yes, the president just doesn't get to make up the rules on when the Senate is in recess. So he just can't appoint people because he's mad at the United States Senate or Congress. So they said they were in pro forma session, which is what we argued, and nine justices agreed with that.
9-0. Wow. So you can do recess appointments. But in this case, Congress was not in recess. That's what the court's saying, correct?
You got it. That's exactly right. They said a 3-day to 10-day window of time in recess is too short to say they were not in recess. Okay. They were in recess.
So the appointees that went through during that time, what happens? Are their names withdrawn? Do you go back to the drawing board? What do you do, Jay?
It's as if, Bill, they were never on because they were not properly appointed. Therefore, they are not officials of the NLRB, and the decisions made during that time frame were, when they were serving on the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, are null and void because they weren't in effect. So what you got is basically a reversal of those decisions because they had no authority to make those decisions in the first place.
I'm still waiting on Hobby Lobby, which, as you know, is a big one, too, and maybe it could still come today. It's possible, but in all likelihood,
tomorrow, Monday.
Yeah,
Justice Scalia is still reading from his concurring opinion in the last few minutes on this case, on the NLRB case.
Monday's the drop dead date, right? Because that's the end of the session, June 30th.
Yeah, and they could even decide to have a scheduled order day tomorrow. That's not unusual for them to add a day and just make an orders list Monday. We'll know that at the end of probably around 30 minutes from now.
Thank you, Jay. Jay Sekulow. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Bill. Martha.
Again, folks, that was Jay on Fox News. Listen, as we go to a break, if you want more information about this case or for an update on Miriam Ibrahim, go to aclj.org. We'll have more analysis later in the broadcast, but information on all of these breaking issues are online at aclj.org.
Mm-hmm.
What appeared to be a tremendous victory for religious freedom has taken an unexpected turn for the worse. Miriam Ibrahim, imprisoned with her two young children because of her Christian faith, had been released by the Sudanese government, spared torture and the death penalty. But one day later, while she and her family were at the airport, her attorney says she was rearrested and her family taken into custody by Sudanese officials. Miriam and her family's fate are now unclear. At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States. Time is of the essence. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online, ACLJ.org. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. We continue to break down the decisions that have come down from the Supreme Court today. The most significant one is the one that we represented the Speaker of the U.S. House, John Boehner, in the Noel Canning versus the National Labor Relations Board. And just to summarize, folks, big victory for the legislative branch, big victory in restraining the power of the President of the United States, and also a clear and defined role set down from the Supreme Court in preserving the right of the House of Representatives to keep the Senate in session. So if you have a situation like this where it's divided government, one party controls the House, one party controls the Senate, either chamber can now keep both chambers in session and prevent the president from trying to go around the legislative branch. I cannot overstate the significance of this victory. It is exactly what we argued. We thank the Speaker of the United States for standing up and making this stand, making this argument. It was not always a popular one, but it was a critically important one to preserve the power of the legislative branch. We are grateful to him. We are grateful to the court for issuing this ruling. I want to play for you now an interview that Jay did with Sean Hannity on the TV broadcast last night to get you up to speed on the IRS issue. So many of these issues are unfolding simultaneously, so I want to get you up to speed on the IRS issue. And to do that, I want to play this interview. This was Jay on with Sean Hannity last night.
Tonight, stunning email evidence has emerged indicating that disgraced IRS official Lois Lerner once targeted veteran Republican Senator Chuck Grassley for an internal audit, and the story continues to develop at this hour. Now, we're going to have more on that in just a moment, but first, earlier this week, lawmakers grilled top administration officials about the missing Lois Lerner emails, which is at the center of the IRS targeting scandal. Now, some of the most heated questioning came from South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy. Let's take a look.
You have already said multiple times today that there was no evidence that you found of any criminal wrongdoing. I want you to tell me what criminal statutes you've evaluated.
I have not looked at any.
Well, then how can you possibly tell our fellow citizens that there's no criminal wrongdoing if you don't even know what statutes to look at?
Because I've seen no evidence that anyone consciously...
Well, how would you know what elements of the crime existed? You don't even know what statutes are at play. I'm going to ask you again.
I think...
What statutes have you evaluated?
I think you can rely on common sense that nothing I have seen...
Common sense.
Like
instead of the criminal code, you want to rely on common sense. No, Mr. Cox, you can shake your head all you want to, Commissioner. You have said today that there's no evidence of criminal wrongdoing, and I'm asking you what criminal statutes you have reviewed to reach that conclusion. You're repeating a talking point from our colleagues on the other side that we're obsessed with the White House. It was Jay Carney who perpetuated the myth that it was two rogue agents in Ohio. It wasn't any of us. Was that accurate? Was that first initial line of defense, that this is just two rogue agents in Ohio? Was that accurate, Commissioner?
Not that I know of.
All right, so that wasn't accurate, and that came from the White House. Who said there's not a smidgen of corruption? Who said that, Commissioner?
My understanding is that was the president.
All right, it was the president. So that's Jay Carney and the president both inserting themselves into the IRS scandal. And you want to blame us for bringing the White House into it?
I haven't blamed you at all.
You just did, Commissioner. You just did.
All right, now, before we get to our guests, let's go to the Hannity Big Board, and let's take a look at the timeline involved in all of this. All right, let's go to June of 2011. Now, this is when Lerner's computer crashes. The interesting thing is the investigation began 10 days earlier. Is that a mere coincidence? Then we go to September 2011 there as well. The IRS cancels their archiving program, which, by the way, we now know is illegal because the archivist from the United States testified this week that, in fact, that was not legal. Then we move forward as we check in with August of 2013. Daryl Issa, he subpoenas all of Lois Lerner's emails. That's an important date. Let's follow the rest of the timeline. February of 2014, the IRS knew that the subpoenaed emails from August of 2013, that they were gone. Did they bother to tell Congress, which had subpoenaed the emails? No, they didn't tell him that. As a matter of fact, in March, when the IRS commissioner testified before Congress, he didn't mention it at all. And I'll get back to that in a second. And then finally, in June of 2013, they revealed to Congress that, in fact, they were unrecoverable. But let's go back. Let's look at the March 26th hearing. Remember, they knew in February, right here, they knew that the IRS emails were gone. Let's go to March. And at a hearing, the IRS commissioner tells Jason Chaffetz that, you know, all the emails were archived on an external server and could be retrieved. Take a look.
You check the sent box and the inbox, and you suddenly have all the emails, correct?
Right. They get taken off and stored in servers, and you've got 90,000 employees, and you've got...
I know, but I'm not asking to search. I'm asking to find one. They type in her email address.
We could find, and we, in fact, are searching, we can find Lois Lerner's emails.
Really? Well, they knew in February that that probably wasn't the case. Why didn't they inform Congress at that time, considering it was way back in August the year before that they had requested and subpoenaed them? That doesn't make any sense. Now, the IRS commissioner also told Daryl Issa that he would provide the missing emails during the hearing on Monday night. Let's take a look at this.
All the emails we have will be provided. I did not say I would provide you emails that disappeared. If you have a magical way for me to do that, I'd be happy to know about it. I said I would provide all the emails. We are providing all the emails. The fact that 3 years ago, some of them, not all of them, but some of them were not available, I never said I would provide you emails we didn't have.
All right, joining me now, we have attorney Cleta Mitchell, and from the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow is with us. Guys, good to see you both. All right, so now, Jay, we're learning a few things here. We know the IRS prematurely retired the storage devices. This is after the archivist said what they did was illegal, and the exact words, they did not follow the law. Lerner's computer crashed 10 days after the investigation began in this case. They ended their contract with the storage company after the computer crash happened. Interesting timing. The IRS commissioner is a Democratic donor. What am I missing here?
You're missing nothing, except what's missing is Lois Lerner's emails. And the reason they're missing is what Cleta and I have alleged in our complaints for our clients is bad actions on behalf of the IRS. I suspect these emails were worse. And Sean, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, when he was testifying, was giving false statements because he already knew, as you pointed out in that timeline, that in fact those IRS emails from Lois Lerner were gone. And if you look at that timeline and focus in on the fact that as soon as they were notified that Congress was looking into the targeting, what happens 10 days later? The so-called crash. And there's another email, one from Lois Lerner to the IT director, where she says, you know, I'm trying to restore my personal files I lost on this computer crash. And the subject line of that email is, be careful of what you ask for. And it may have been tongue-in-cheek, but the reality is a crime has been committed here, and the Commissioner of Internal Revenue Service needs to be advised when he's testifying under oath before Congress to tell the truth.
You know, it's very interesting, Cleta, as I go to you here. First of all, we were told it was rogue agents in Cincinnati until the rogue agents told Congress, no, it wasn't us. We were taking orders from Washington. The president says not a smidgen of evidence. That's not true. What do you make of this new development as it relates to Senator Grassley tonight, that in fact they were targeting him?
Well, you know, that doesn't surprise me. Nothing surprises me anymore. The IRS scandal reminds me of those infomercials where they say, wait, wait, there's more. because every time you think you've heard it all, you hear something new, something outrageous that they've done. How about when we learned just barely 6 weeks ago that the IRS Lois Lerner had sent a database of 12,000 citizens groups to the FBI to go through and see about possible criminal prosecution of these citizens groups? Look, we've had four commissioners of the IRS or acting commissioners in a row who've trotted up to Congress and lied. That's what they've done. They've made false statements. Doug Shulman, when he was commissioner, told the Oversight Committee that there was no targeting of conservative groups. That was a lie. Stephen Miller, who was the acting commissioner, testified last May that there was nothing that the IRS or he had done wrong. That was a lie. We had Danny Werfel, who was dispatched by the Obama White House to go over there last May, and he testified in June of last year there was no intentional wrongdoing, even though he didn't interview any employees. That was a lie. And now we have Koskinen. This is the problem. It's the IRS is the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. And the question is, are we going to get to the bottom line here? Ultimately, were they able and capable of destroying all the evidence? I'm not so sure that's going to be
I'm
as
not
easy.
Either.
90% of the American people, Fox News poll, Jay, think that the IRS, that these files were deliberately destroyed, these emails. Even 74% of independents and 63% of Democrats. This seems to be a growing scandal. A cancer is beginning to sort of work its way, certainly around the IRS, maybe the White House?
I think so. Sean, there is no way that these emails vanished. Okay, first of all, they're recipients of these emails. And are they going to come out and say that all the recipients that received Lois Lerner's emails, those mysteriously vanished as well? Remember, they floated that idea of saying there were six other crashes to kind of put out there. We may not be able to recover those. They've kind of backtracked on that. Sean, we're in litigation. It's serious litigation right now. There'll be discovery. If they exist, we're going to find them. If they do not exist, then the presumption is that what we've alleged in the complaints are true. But Sean, you now know the connection between the Treasury and IRS and the White House, and that's the Chief of Staff. So Lois Lerner may not have sent an email to President Obama or to his team, but Nicole Flack sure did, and she had a lot of visits to that White House while this was all going on.
And why did
they knew
tell
exactly
them,
what they were doing
they told
when
them
the President
Congress.
Did that State of the Union speech. And yeah, go ahead.
Now they said that before Congress, but we're running out of time. We're going to stay on the story. Yep. Guys, good to see you.
Again, folks, that was Jay on with Sean Hannity last night. Listen, there are a lot of breaking news stories here. The IRS scandal, the decisions coming down from the Supreme Court specifically as it relates to recess nominations, and of course that Hobby Lobby decision is out there as well. You've also got the fluid situation with Miriam Ebrahim in Sudan. If you want an update on any of these issues, I need you to go to ACLJ.org. We are constantly posting the latest there. You can also follow Jordan on Twitter, twitter.com/Jordan. Seculo for all of the latest on this. We will give you more analysis on the recess nominations case in the next segment of the broadcast. But as we go to a break, if you want more updates, go to ACLJ.org.
This is Jay Sekulo, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA-accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty, according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top two in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law.
What appeared to be a tremendous victory for religious freedom has taken an unexpected turn for the worse. Miriam Ebrahim, imprisoned with her two young children because of her Christian faith, had been released by the Sudanese government, spared torture and the death penalty. But one day later, while she and her family were at the airport, her attorney says she was rearrested and her family taken into custody by Sudanese officials. Miriam and her family's fate are now unclear. At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States.
Time is of the essence. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online, aclj.org.
Folks, welcome back to the broadcast. Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. Listen, it was a crazy morning here at the ACLJ as the Supreme Court was issuing its decisions. Jay was actually on Fox News with Bill Hemmer. You heard part of that interview earlier, but Bill actually kept him on for multiple segments. He was on with Shannon Bream to break down these decisions that were coming down from the Supreme Court as they happened. So I wanted you to sort of hear that in real time. You're going to hear Jay and Shannon and Bill sort of work through these decisions as they read through them and give you instant analysis. I thought this would be a fascinating look into what this morning at the ACLJ looked like. Again, this is Jay, Bill Hemmer, and Shannon Bream on Fox News from this morning.
Meanwhile, major developments in the IRS targeting scandal as new emails released to congressional investigators show that Lois Lerner floated the idea of examining Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley about 2 years ago. South Dakota Senator John Thune weighed in on that with Greta. Listen.
This should outrage not only Republicans but Democrats. And as you just mentioned, this latest example of targeting Senator Grassley, whose integrity really as a member of the United States Senate is unquestioned, is another example of political targeting. And it's clear that these guys who have the power literally to ruin and destroy people's lives will stop at nothing. And I think this is the Grassley letter is another example.
Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. How are you, Jay? Good morning to you. We may interrupt our segment. Let's see what happens.
We just got a decision, actually, Bill. The Noel Cannon case just came out, the president's recess appointment power.
That's the one that had to do with, the Senate was in break? An appointment was made?
Yeah, and the court ruled in favor of saying that the Senate was, in fact, controlling its own rules and the president did not have authority. That's what the initial read is.
So what happens then? The appointment is null and void? That person's
null
extracted?
And void.
What happens?
So we're getting it. I'm analyzing it right now. It just literally came out moments ago. I represent Speaker Boehner in that case before the Supreme Court. So indications are, at least the initial read, is that we prevailed.
All right, Jay. Stand by on that. We're going to go to Shannon Bream in a moment because there may be more on that as well, and there could be additional cases. On the Lois Lerner deal, what's the big deal here? Because she received a letter, and Grassley had an invite, and he and his wife were allegedly going to attend, and in the end they never did. What does all this mean,
Jay? Think the biggest issue here is that we have with the Lois Lerner email as it relates to Grassley, the idea that she would send that to exam for review is breathtaking. I mean, first of all, she's a tax-exempt organization head. She doesn't head up the examination division, yet she took it on her own prerogative to basically refer for an audit Senator Grassley because she didn't like what she perceived to be some meeting they were both going to attend and how it was being funded. So this was absurd, but it shows the nature and depth of what Lois Lerner was trying to do.
Make the distinction here, Jay. The examination was the word that was used in the email. Is that the same as an audit, or is that just a step possibly toward
exactly
it?
Right. The division of the IRS, Bill, that does audits is the examination division. So when she said, let's send it to exam, that, in fact, was, without a question, sending it over for an audit review.
So the assumption was that Grassley was going to go and take his wife and not claim it, right?
Right, and not say that was income, and therefore they were going to catch the senator, who was, of course, a ranking member of the Finance Committee, which oversees the IRS. But this is the pattern and practice of what Lois Lerner's been engaged in and what that politicized IRS has been engaged in. The idea that she was going to send this to exam and not only threatened to do it, but wanted to do it, requested it to be done. The only reason it didn't happen was one of her deputies said, I don't think that's a really good idea. We probably shouldn't do that. So she finally backed off. But the fact that she was even thinking that she could send this to exam, and she's a tax exempt specialist, but sending it over for an audit is really outrageous, way over the top.
I understand the point you're making. Why did this become public?
Well, it became public because there were some emails that were released, and Senator Grassley, although it could have been deemed private information, he signed what's called a 6103 waiver. That's the privacy waiver, and that allowed the House committee to say, to produce the Senator Grassley email.
And so this is 2012. Was that the same period that they were looking for emails that apparently were lost, deleted, destroyed, and the hard drives are no longer available?
I think it was right. I think they started finding those again right after in 12, because it was really 09 through April 11 that were the big lost years, which was when the whole targeting scheme was developed.
You know, because you start to wonder now, and the mind reels, and you wonder, well, what other sort of communications went out? And on this particular email, Jay, was it just internal within the IRS, or is this one of the emails that would have been sent to another entity in Washington, D.C., outside the agency?
Yeah, this would have. It looks like this was what's called an interagency email. It would have gone from one division, the tax exempt division, from Lois Lerner over to the examination division, the audit division. So it was within the IRS, but clearly way outside the scope of what Lois Lerner had the authority to do. And it shows the political nature of what she's doing.
To tell viewers why that's significant is because this was interagency, or it was within the IRS. But the emails that a lot of folks are looking for are the ones that they communicated with outside the agency. So then the ultimate question then becomes, with whom are you communicating at that time during the period in question? Give you the last word, then we got to run, Jay.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, we know it was the Department of Justice and at least the Federal Election Commission, two outside agencies that were not supposed to get information.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Sekulo. If there's more news from the Supreme Court, hang on, okay? We might bring you back. Thank you, Jay.
Right here.
Passed.
Yes, sir.
It looks like there will be. One decision is already in, and Shannon Bream has been going through it. It has to do with whether or not the president can make recess appointments, as he did to the National Labor Relations Board. The Senate objected to those recess appointments that he made because they said they weren't really in recess when he made them. So what has the Supreme Court decided on this, Shannon?
It is a mixed bag, but here's how it works. The court goes through a long analysis, which I haven't read all of it just yet, but basically recognizing that the president does have power to make recess appointments. But in this particular case, this is a unanimous opinion, they said the three-day window that the Senate was operating on, where they gaveled in, gaveled out, was too short. So while recognizing a lot of constitutional power for the president to make recess appointments, they said in this case, not so. It says, under the standard set forth here, the Senate was in session during these pro forma sessions at issue. It said it was in session, and Senate rules make clear that the Senate retained the power to conduct business. Could have conducted business simply by passing some other unanimous consent agreement. It says the court won't. Let me skip some of the technical for you, but it said what happened here, because the Senate was in session during its pro forma sessions, the president made the recess appointments at issue during a three-day recess. 3 days is too short a time to bring a recess within the scope of the clause, that appointments clause, so the president lacked the authority to make those appointments. So while recognizing a broad power for the president to make recess appointments, in this case, it's not going to work. It's a unanimous opinion. 3 days was too short, so these appointments to the National Labor Relations Board were no good.
Martha. All right. Shannon, thank you so much. Great job digesting that quickly. I know we may have some more opinions coming. We're waiting for Hobby Lobby, which you mentioned, which obviously so many people have been watching really closely. So we'll come back to you as soon as that comes through. You know, obviously, all presidents make recess appointments, and they often do it with people that they want to appoint who have been controversial, who they think are going to have a hard time at a hearing. John Bolton, for example, was a recess appointment under President Bush as our ambassador. But the question here was whether or not there was gamesmanship going on, whether or not the Senate was really not in recess when those National Labor Relations Board appointments were made, and they were very controversial at the time, and now that the court has said that one doesn't count. Mm-hmm. They were not in recess.
So we're waiting on four big ones. That's one, and we'll see if we get another one momentarily.
Folks, again, that was just a taste of what this morning at the ACLJ looked like. It's not all that unusual, actually. When issues and opinions come down from the Supreme Court, that is what our morning looks like. Jay did a great job reacting simultaneously as these decisions came down there on Fox News. We're grateful to Fox News for turning to him for that analysis. If you want updates on any of these matters, folks, you can always find them online at aclj.org or by following Jordan on Twitter at twitter.com/JordanSekulow.
At the ACLJ, we've launched a global campaign on Miriam's behalf. Now we must focus on pressuring Sudan to release her and the family and permit them to return to the United States. We must apply immediate international pressure to free Miriam and her family. And we must urge the Obama administration to grant Miriam and her American kids safe passage and immediate legal status in the United States. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or you can add your name online. ACLJ.